Musically meditated.
Welcome to Musically Meditated Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Riley, and I have my co-host here, the Serbian sadistic Shug Knight, a.k.a. Sretan Jovanovic. How you doing, Sretan?
What's up, man? I feel like you're painting the wrong picture to the people about what I'm actually
like. Oh, don't
be
sensitive.
I'm like a teddy bear. I smell like cotton candy.
Right on. Well, we have a very special guest with us. We have Dave Karski from Hey My Man Podcast.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing, man?
Good.
Great. Thanks for coming to Green Door Studios here at Green Door Network.
Hey, you guys got like a whole block.
We do, right? Like Shug Knight?
Exactly. So maybe you're right on the money.
We like to give off that impression.
Right. But Dave, please introduce yourself. You are, I'll say this much, you are the OG of the podcast game, your first podcast in the region. So
as far as I know. Okay. So just real quick, I do a podcast called the Hey My Man Podcast. Some people call it Hey My Man. Some people call it the Hey My Man Podcast. I write it both ways. I'm not even sure which it is at this point in time. But so basically we do, myself and the guy I podcast with, his name is Ben. We do a podcast where we basically get together and we say that kind of stuff that most people are afraid to say. So what I mean by that is if you want to complain, everyone has complaints about their neighbors, their wives, their kids' teachers, their baseball coaches, all that stuff. And most people are, you know, they're nice and sweet and professional and wouldn't go out of their way to bad talk these people. So we do that for them. So pretty much an open book. I do most of it. And Ben likes to call himself a sniper. Well, he'll jump in and he'll add stuff here and there. But you guys are a pretty positive podcast. That's one thing I really like about you. We are not. We're positive about being negative. And a lot of that comes, I hate, it's very tropey, from, I think, me being Jewish. And that's just a very Jewish thing to do is complain. That's right on the money. I heard you talking the other day about Serbian people being, was it you that was saying that they're fiscally?
No, that was actually on.
Is that true since you're here?
No, I was in my car. That was on Alan from Local 219.
Okay,
it was on
his
show.
That's right, it was.
And his social media guy is married to a Serbian girl. And while they were talking, I was like, no way.
No! So speak your piece.
You find a few that are, and those that are, it's to an extreme.
Yeah, sure.
Those are the ones that'll take millions of dollars to the grave.
So we're not going to check the box on all Serbians being fiscally.
No. If you end up having a meal with me or going somewhere with me, you're going to have to fight me for the check.
This is true. Yeah.
It's kind of extremes. There's no like middle grounds. You'll find a Serbian family they'll have $100 in their wallet and they'll ask you for $5 to pay for something because they just don't want to break a 20. But then you'll get the ones that'll literally like you go on vacation with them and they'll pay for everything.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that and I gave you the opportunity, but I'm still going to stick with my Jews are whining and they like to complain, but a lot of times it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is.
So, I mean, how many Jewish people made, their entire career on being whiny complainers like me? So, moving on then.
Yeah, moving on. What do you got to say about the Irish? I'm Irish, Dave. So
I don't know any Irish people. So.
Oh, okay.
So here's I only hang around with Jewish people. This is very weird.
This is very weird. He's uncomfortable. But, yeah, moving on. I was told, and from what I've come across on your social media, you are a music lover. That's why we have you in the building tonight. And we're going to focus on punk rock.
Sure.
So we'll just go right into that, man. How did punk rock actually find you? And well, like, how old were you? What was going on in your life?
So I can remember the exact moment. I was 12 years old, which would have been 1988. I saw an advertisement right before Christmas for a skateboarding video called Psycho Skate. It was a video where, regardless of what team you skated for, it was prior to all this. It wasn't like a team video. It was just like all these great skaters put together in this one video. And during the promotion or the ad, they had a song called Coolidge by Descendants. And I heard that song and I was like, what is this? This is insane. I remember VHS recording the commercial because I wanted to show my mom, because back then there was no internet. This is prior to all this. So unless you wrote down the P.O. box number where you needed to send the check to, and if you know, as a kid, you couldn't use your parents' credit card, you know, and you couldn't write checks. So I had to record it. I recorded, I don't remember what station it was, but one where it would pop up in the hopes that I would get this commercial, and sure enough, I did. So I heard that song, and then I have a cousin who's like 3 years older than me, also into skateboarding, and I was talking to him about it. He's like, hey, actually, I have, somebody gave me a tape. It was dubbed. It had Coolidge on one side, and a Slammin' Watusi song, a band out of Chicago, on the other side called Skate, 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 which was also on that soundtrack. And so I had a copied, you know, a dubbed tape with just those two songs for probably like a year, and I just listened to them on rotation until I could get more stuff. I didn't know where to go and where to get the stuff from because, like I said, this stuff wasn't being played on MTV. There wasn't being played on the radio. You couldn't get it anywhere. You had to have an older brother or a cousin or a buddy with an older brother. It was really the only way to get it.
Right. You didn't have a bootleg Bob in your life.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Shout out to bootleg Bob.
That was bootleg Bill.
Bootleg Bill? Sorry,
yeah,
Bill.
But he was on that death metal tip. You know?
Okay.
That wasn't punk. But that wasn't punk.
But it's the same concept.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But I appreciate that that's the way I grew up because I have so many tapes. So eventually what happens is my sister's friend is dating this guy, Roy. And this guy comes over to our house and he knows I have a skateboard. He sees me skateboarding around and everywhere my sister's friend goes or my sister goes, her friend goes. So this guy's tailing along and he notices I'm on a skateboard or whatever. And I remember this dude came over. He was a monster. And he was wearing a bomber, and he had his head shaved. And I was like, what is this? And the guy's like, hey, listen, dude, I used to be into punk. I'm not into punk. That stuff, it's no good. I'm not into it. It stinks. And he's like, I'm now into hardcore. Meaning what I'm talking about is like hardcore as in like, I don't even know, like Cro-Mags or like more like
punk,
moving
yeah.
toward like New Metal. York style, like the straight edge hardcore scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's where his progression was going. And so he gave me like a boot box full of, I wrote it down. I had every Dead Kennedys record, every Minutemen record, every Black Flag record, audio tapes.
Yeah.
Circle Jerks, Naked Ray Gun, The Effigies, Rights of the Accused, Descendants, Minor Threat, Articles of Faith, Government Issue. I had everything. So imagine somebody giving you a huge treasure and you don't even know what it is. You have no idea. And you're like looking at it like, okay, well, cool, whatever. He's like, this is what skateboarders listen to. So here you go. And I was like, okay, cool. And I was just on that. I was going from like seventh grade to eighth grade. And, you know, before that, I was sneaking around listening to Dice on my headphones, Two Live Crew,
right.
all a bunch of other stuff my parents wouldn't be cool with. And this guy was like, this is where you're going. So like your parents ain't going to like this either. So I was intrigued.
Yeah, I love that. I like how you mentioned too, recording the video to get the number,
mm-hmm.
because that's some old school shit. You're a little bit older than I am, but I would do that. I would make mixtape videos of music videos that I liked on the VHS.
Like 120 minutes?
Yeah, you know, so whatever kind of music it was, like, mm-hmm. I would sit there and hit record, and what was it, pause at the same time to do it on the V8? Do you guys remember on the VCR? I don't know.
I would hit, like, record and pause and then pop the pause button
yeah.
off.
Play and record.
Yeah, play and record. Thank you. Right. So I would do that, make my own mixtape VHS mixtape videos, you know, so we would hang out and spend the night, like, just put that in and just watch the videos over and over. So, yeah, that's very nostalgic. I remember that. And I like how you brought up the fact how you were introduced to punk. I didn't really get into punk until, like, late teens, early 20s because of the fact, like how you said, you either had, like, a friend or a family member. All my friends, all of us, we were into either hip-hop or heavy metal. My parents weren't listening to punk rock at all. No uncles, no nothing, no boy, you know, like, sisters' boyfriends. So I just kind of accidentally fell into it, like, 19... you know, 18, 19 years old, but backtracking, like obviously Green Day, you know, that was huge when that came out. That was more pop punk. And then, you know, Kurt Cobain, but the first band that I got into was Black Flag. We'll get there in a little bit, but you know, it's weird how that works out. Like,
we're probably going to, just before we do, we would normally have had this argument if it had been a couple years ago on you saying, and I know like, hey, this is Green Day, that's punk. Well, quite qualify that, it's pop punk. This is how I feel about that. If you would have talked to me when I was 13, 14, 15, I would have absolutely said in no way, shape, or form is that punk rock. Get that
right.
out of my face.
Right.
I was so myopic about what was punk rock. And so what had happened was nobody around me, I was the guy. I had the tapes. This Roy had moved on down the road. I never even saw the guy again. Have no idea whatever happened to
what
him.
What an influence he had on your life, though, right?
Yeah. The guy's name is Roy Booth. I have no idea where
he is.
What
up, Roy?
Yeah. So this guy changed my life forever because I had a buddy who played drums, and he was real big in Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath. His dad played drums. In fact, his dad is cousins with the Styx. So his dad grew up in a musical family, and the kid had drums. So I was like, dude, we ought to get in a band. And as I started listening to this music, I was like, this is something we can do. A lot of it. You know, you listen to the Germs, and you're like, okay, there's some technical guitar stuff there, but we can get there. It's not that hard. The very first song most people learn when they pick up a guitar is Mary Had a Little Lamb. And I learned Mr. Gridlock by Naked Raygun. It was like the first song I learned I just by plinking along. I quit guitar lessons after like the third lesson. I was like, it's just not for me. I guarantee none of those guys took guitar lessons. In fact, I know they didn't take any guitar lessons, you know, for the most part.
That's the beauty of punk, yeah.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be technical to be good.
But the argument I was trying to circumvent is the one where, like, you go, hey, this is punk, and then you double think that and go, oh, I know you like punk, so I'm not going to say that's punk. I really don't care at this point, but I would tell you before, and I still get viscerally, you probably see it on my face, when somebody says that, I do, like, the cringe, like, but with that being said, at this point in time, I missed out on a lot of music. I missed out on a lot of things because I was just like one of these, like these vegan hardcore people, not vegan or hardcore, but that's how I looked at this scene. It was like, this is my scene, and I was the one that spread this out. And so I felt like I was the arbitrator of what this this scene in the Tri-Town area, Northwest Indiana, was going to be for the people that I could reach. And I was like, I'm going to say what is cool and what isn't cool. And if you like this, you're done.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I was growing, like, same age group, you had to be either metal or punk. Like, you couldn't cross, you couldn't do both for whatever reason. You know how that is when you're younger? Like, you can't be into both scenes, or, like, it just wasn't cool. So I think that's why I kind of shunned the whole punk scene in a teenage, like, during my teenage years, because all my friends, all of us, we were into heavy metal, death metal, grindcore. You know, hardcore is kind of what got me into it, too, because there's a lot of punk within hardcore too, you know. But yeah, at the young age, like, you just have to pick a flag or a color, well, so to speak, you know.
So this is where I'm able to cross over a little bit, is because, so I'm skateboarding, and the skateboard culture at that time was predominantly punk rock music, or like surf music, surf punk, whatever. And so some of the people, I went to Lake Central High School in St. John. There's 870 people in my freshman class. So in every class, there's like almost 900 people. It's so huge. Imagine, yeah, there's like 4,000 kids in the school. But this group of punk rock slash skater kids was very small, and they were very protective of their group. But if you skateboarded, you were also allowed to transcend just being a punk rocker. So, like, you know, you'd be like a weekend warrior, and some of these guys listened to hip hop at the time, and some of the guys listened to death metal. And so you could kind of cross over, but like when you were with your own people, you definitely listened to you were flying the flag. Like, you could wear a Dead Kennedy shirt, but you could listen to Godflesh if you were with those people. But you weren't listening to Godflesh if you were with the punk rock, especially me, because I felt like I had a responsibility.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy. Like,
it is crazy.
Younger.
Well, I'm mental, so you know.
No, it's good, but yeah, like, you had to pick a side.
This meant everything to me.
Yeah.
You know, it was my complete identity. I went from having no, like I said, listening to George Carlin, and that was the punk rock I had before, and then all of a sudden I was just off the rails.
So how do you think it personally, like, how did it speak to you? Like, what was it about
punk? I was angry.
Rock? Okay.
I was angry. You know, I'm a middle child, and it's anybody who's a middle child will understand this. It's like you try to find your place. You know, I had a younger brother. My older sister was a straight-A student. My younger brother liked all the same things my dad did. He physically looked like my dad, and he was the baby. And so, you know, my dad was kind of a rebellious dude as a young man, as I would find out later in life. And I spent my entire life attempting to prove something to this guy. And a lot of it was like, you know, trying to bring negative attention to myself. And the way to do it, the way to really get to him was like, you know, listen to this and just tune him out and take this attitude forward. And nothing... These specific bands in the beginning, the ones that you call hardcore, or that people call hardcore, like Circle Jerks and Black Flag, those bands spoke to that kind of attitude, and that's what I embraced, like just straight anger. I had no intention of being nice. I didn't want to be nice. I wanted to be mean and mad and whatever.
Like, especially Minor Threat, I think they capture just, I don't know, youth, anger, confusion, just, you know, rebellion all into just, you know, out of step. And then, you know, the, what is it? The 7 inches, but it's all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like those two albums. Like, that's just like, to this day, if I want to lift some weights, I'll put that on. That'll get me in the mood in like 2 seconds.
When I'm heading to take my son who's 13 to wrestling, I'll put on some Minor Threat. I'll put on some Dag Nasty.
Yeah.
And it's foreign to him, but it doesn't matter. I mean, he's probably like looking at me like, but I'm ready to get out there and wrestle. Yeah. I'm like, dude, I wish I could wrestle right now because I want to do major damage. And I'll tell him, like, when you go out there, you want to make this person wish they never stepped on the wrestling mat. Not like go out there and win as a good sportsman, because that's just not, that wasn't my attitude.
Right.
And kids today are different.
Yeah, it's about
and I don't understand. Like, he's just like, everyone's friends, man. And it's all about like me succeeding and you succeeding. I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
You know, it doesn't.
Especially on the wrestling mat.
Well, my kid, I told the story on my podcast. My kid, they have like a pajama day at school, and he would come downstairs and he's wearing pajamas. I'm like, what are you doing? Wearing pajamas. I go, why? It's pajama day at school. I go, dude, you're in middle school, bro. Take those pajamas off. Only the nerds wear pajamas. Nah, everybody's wearing pajamas. I'm like, dude, someone is going to beat you down. And he's like, why would they do that? And I'm thinking, why wouldn't they? I would. Right. I still want to do it right now. I would fight. You know, I just never did what everybody else did. So, you know, right away, that I look at that as a target. Like, my mentality is I look at that and I go, this is the kid I'm going to pick on.
Right.
You know,
we got those pajama pants. Sweat and go get them.
And that's what happened when pop punk, it took over. And see, now this is what we have. See?
I like how you brought up the backtrack to Dag Nasty, because they're like the second emo band probably ever, arguably.
Right. Sure.
You know, because Rites of Spring is the first emo band.
Sure.
And then
emo
it was
core.
Yeah. But I mean, there really wasn't.
Right.
Because emo came out of hardcore punk.
Right.
Right. You know, so it was Rites of Spring. Sure. And then Dag Nasty. But yeah, I liked how you dropped a little Dag Nasty reference there. That's
cool.
That's old school.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'll cut you guys off. No. So how's your influence with your children? So your son is 13.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be pretty exciting when he turns 16 and how he's going to be like light years ahead of everybody else as far as his musical taste and where that might be when he turns 20.
My 6, almost 7-year-old daughter is probably more like me than he is. But like, you know, this, I tell a lot of people this. Music was so important to me, and I didn't know that it was going to be important until it happened, until that minute I saw this Descendants or heard this Descendants song. And my kid's into this. He listens to what I listen to, just like most parents force their music on their children. And I think he genuinely likes it. However, I'm waiting for the moment where I see that he gets struck. And he goes, this is my thing now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm hoping it's not like Marilyn Manson or something like that. But, you know, what are you going to do? It is
what
it is.
Or Dave Matthews Band.
That even, yeah, that too.
How dare you.
That too.
I had to give him some shit.
No, I got you.
I remember when I was younger, because I've talked about it before. I grew up in a family where my parents didn't really care what we listened to. They weren't any kind of musical influence. And I remember I was sort of a musical influence to my brother in a way. But I remember when he latched onto it, like Soundgarden, and then he latched onto like Wu-Tang, and it was just cool to watch. And then he just, like, I just watched him fly past me with his taste.
Yeah.
And now when he tries to introduce me to new music, because my palate is like bland, like, about, you know, I can't taste those flavors. And he'll be like, listen to this. I can't connect to most of it. It's because he's just been introduced to all that stuff, and like you said, he's connected to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, to me, it's awesome. To me, it's one of the best things about music, is that connection that you feel when it's not Nickelback. But it could be Dave Matthews
or Dave's. Yeah. But another thing, Dave, like, has this inspired you? You've mentioned before that you are a musician. How has it inspired you in your artistic life? Punk rock.
Well, as a young man, beyond skateboarding, that's another. Once I started playing music, then skateboarding took a backseat. But it was pretty much like skateboarding all day long with punk rock, and then playing punk rock with more punk rock.
On your Walkman?
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah. Absolutely. So I started a band, and I basically told these guys like, hey, you know, this is the stuff I want to play. This is the style I want to play. And they were like, dude, we'll do whatever. We don't really know anything anyway. So I had a lot of influence in the beginning. I wrote all the songs, and, you know, I had a lot of control over what was going on. And then, you know, because I was a bad behavior, a lot of times I was grounded or not allowed to go and play. Like, we would have a show lined up, and all of a sudden I'd be grounded. So what happens is eventually the band goes like, well, now we're like a real band and we have shows. So like, this guy's going to come and play while you're not there. And then, you know, me being me, I was like, all right, well, then I'm out. Forget it. You know, I'm going to start another band or whatever. Just a complete control freak. But I feel like being up on, there's nothing like it. I mean, you've been in bands, so you know, yeah, like super nervous till the minute you strum that first chord, and then it's on.
What did you play? What?
Off the Alley was a huge venue. The Rink, Thirsty Whale, Fireside Bowl.
You did Fireside?
Yeah.
What was your band called?
At that time, the band was called The Ramblers. Before that, it was called Catch 22.
Okay.
So we also were like one of the first punk bands out in this area that I knew of. And in fact, it's funny because you had Andy Reid on not that long ago, and he was talking about, I just listened to it recently, and he was talking about living in South Haven. The first show I actually went to, some older kids took me to it. It was at the South Haven Community Center, where all the coolest shows happened at these VFWs and stuff. But it was a band called Psycho Reggae. And Psycho Reggae, I don't know whatever happened to them, but they were like, you know, like an early 7 Seconds, okay, early like Naked Ray Gun sort of band. And again, that's what made me want to be in a band, because I was like, well, you can also play this music and have people look at you like you look at other people. So I was sold 100%.
What instrument did you play?
So in Catch 22, I played guitar, and in the Ramblers, I played bass.
What kind of guitar did you have? An SG?
No, had a Strat, like a custom Strat.
Oh,
like
nice.
Yeah.
So, what kind of bass?
I still have it. It's just a Yamaha, just garbage bass. I mean, it served its purpose. And again, my whole point was I thought I was going to break it on every show. I wanted to, but again, that one part of me where I went to break it, I was like, it's going to cost me some money. So, you know.
What made you train? Why'd you go to bass? Just because you guys didn't have a bass player?
No. In that other band, the guy who was the singer in Catch 22 was a far better guitar player. And we moved to sort of like a rockabilly street rock rather than punk rock. And so he wanted to do his thing. And I was like, well, this guy's way more prolific on guitar. So I want to be in the band. And I felt like playing bass allowed me to do, you know, jump up and do crazy things, where when I played guitar, I know for me, I was like concentrating way too hard.
Okay.
So I was just like, there's a little bit of freedom in playing bass for me, at least.
Yeah.
But I'm not Les Claypool. So.
Right. Right. None of us are. He's the man. He's definitely the man. But yeah, let's transition into some hardcore punk bands that I you know, from talking to you earlier, that I know we could really dig deep into. And the first one is Black Flag. Like I mentioned earlier, I really wasn't into punk rock until my late teens, early 20s. In my experience with Black Flag, like, I loved Henry Rollins. I knew who he was. I knew that he was in a band named Black Flag. I knew that Kurt Cobain loved Black Flag, and he was with Chris Novoselic at a Black Flag show, and you know, that's how Nirvana came up. So I knew the history, but I didn't really know, because it was hard to find that kind of stuff at a young age. But I was at this like garage party or whatever, and they were jamming Black Flag. I'm like, yeah, that's Rollins. They're like, yeah. I stole the CD. It was damaged. sorry to whoever CD that was, but I stole it, and I've been in love with Black Flag ever since. But like we talked before, you were more into the early Black Flag with Keith Morris, correct?
Right.
And why is that?
Well, Keith is a small, in stature, he's a small dude. He's outrageously angry, especially at that time. I don't know what he's like now, but I'm assuming he's probably still the same, just like I am.
I got to see him with Off not too long ago, and he was great. Yeah.
And so I looked at this guy. He was like Lenny Dykstra. Like, I looked up to Lenny Dykstra. I was like, here's a guy that's small, you know, in stature like I am.
But Dykstra was on that juice, though.
Yeah,
man.
Well, I mean, eventually. But I'm just saying, he also has that punk rock ethos. That like, you know, that's his mindset. If you listen to him now on Howard or wherever he's at, like, you're like, dude, this guy's totally punk rock. But so Lenny, it was the same thing. Like, I looked at this guy and I was like, well, I could be that. But he has this like really weird affect when he speaks. He is like the epitome of California, you know, surfer sort of lingo. And I just like his diction. I like the way he sings. And I liked, if you ever seen Decline of Western Civilization, which anybody who's into punk rock, especially back in those days, we rented it from box office like every single weekend. And I looked at it and I was like, man, this guy is just 100% shot out of a cannon. And that's why I liked that early Black Flag too, because I thought that Ron Reyes, who is in Black Flag during Decline, era, I was like, man, this guy is just same thing.
He is arguably
possesses everything that I possess.
Yeah, he is arguably like the best vocalist. Like, his voice is amazing, you know. And like you said, that video or that live footage for Western Decline, it leaves an impression. But there's a lot of other you know, interviews I've watched specifically like at the drive-in, they're like, yeah, he is the best vocalist for Black Flag. And when I got to see him with my father in 2012, 2013 at Reggie's, he was doing vocals. So it was even better, you know, like
how did it sound?
It was great. It was great, you know, and it was Ray, but yeah, he's the man, but I'm still a Rollins guy because I love Rollins.
Well, to digress for one second, the reason I didn't go see any of these new incantations of Black Flag whenever they do these shows or whatever is because I'm so specifically protective of the scene that I feel like I'm an outlier now, and I'm like, I don't deserve to be there because my time has passed. Like that I enjoy the music, but that I don't possess that same... I don't embody that spirit anymore. So I feel like I'm kind of like a poser now if I go to the show. And a lot of people are like, oh, you whatever. But I go like, nah, man, it's somebody else's turn. It's somebody else's time. Like, I remember being at shows. I went to a Fear show, however. Awesome. And everybody there was like as old as Lee Ving except for us. And it was without a doubt the most violent, dangerous thing. It was filled with bikers and skinheads. And at the very beginning, he was like, dude, if you're a skinhead, get out. And then they weren't wanting to leave, and the bikers were like, "No, you're leaving." And I was like, "We're trapped in the middle of all this, from the first note to the last note, man." It was violence. Oh my God!
Where was this at? Where was this?
It was at the Metro, and it was like I don't know, early mid '90s, something like that.
Wow.
And he was still young and spry at the time, and it was an insane show. But I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy where the young kids are like, "Why is this dude here?" Or I'm sitting down, like I'll be in the seated area.
Well, don't worry, it was all old dudes at there.
All right, cool.
I hope kids know who Black Flag, you know, like who they are and whatnot. Sure. But no, it was all dudes like us there, you know. But I like the Rollins era just way better, and I think the package was perfect, especially like with the artwork. When I say package, like the artwork by Pettibon, just the energy that Henry brought there, because you could tell he was a fanboy that got the mic. I mean, you know the story, and it's just everything about the Rollins era. And I like musically too how Greg Ginn was able to just kind of cut away from the whole punk rock ethos in itself. You know, like you could tell he's switching it up a little bit. Around Slip It In, or specifically My War, because My War Side B, I mean, that's kind of like the catalyst of a lot of doom, you know, and a lot of
production
emo.
Value way up. Yeah, like you hear like, you know, the drum triggers and like everything is like it's if you know. So there's an earlier story where they're talking about how so Lucky, the drummer from the Circle Jerks, was going to play with Greg in Black Flag, and he's like a traditional trained jazz drummer. And Greg's argument at the time was like, this dude doesn't make mistakes. He's not sloppy enough. He's too technical. No, he can't. We're not playing with him. And at the same time, because of all the issues that Keith was having with substances and just sort of being like his own person, they parted ways. Well, he's like, well, I'll take Lucky then. That's cool. But it's funny to see that as Black Flag progresses and Greg gets older and he's like, everything gets tight. And that's where I lose them because I go, this is what I don't like. And that's why I like the Circle Jerks better, because I feel like they, I think on their last album, 4, I think it is, or 6 or whatever it is, the production value is way increased. And they it's more of like a hard, heavy record. And I'm like, yeah, like miss me with that. I'm over it.
You kind of like the sludgy, dirty.
Yeah. Like just street rock and roll, garage
sloppy,
punk.
Grunge
yeah.
punk, right on. I just, Greg Ginn's, he's one of my favorite guitarists just
without
because he experiments a lot. Like you said, you could tell he was really big into Grateful Dead and a lot of jazz, and he did a lot of weird stuff with his amplification and his guitars, and he's just a monster on the axe for sure.
I actually made a list of iconic punk guitar players.
Let's hear him.
He is on it. The most influential by far to me is John Haggerty from Naked Raygun and Pegboy. Like, so this guy is one of these people, just like Greg, who cultivated an entire sound which would become post-punk. That Chicago had its own specific sound that wasn't L.A. and it wasn't New York. It was.
See, I don't. Yeah, tell me about it because I don't know. I know about Naked Raygun, but I don't know him like you know Naked Raygun, especially post.
Dude, talk. I'll be honest. Like, I got lucky enough to, in the MySpace days, I made a connection with the drummer Eric Spicer, and we became friendly. And I've gone out and drank beers with him. I've gone to a hotel party that they threw, where it was a birthday party for I think it was his birthday party or his wife's, and Naked Raygun was there, and I think Stiff Little Fingers were in there, and like It was crazy. I remember standing at the door. We were invited to this party, and the door was like half open. And I didn't want to knock on it. Like, me and my buddies were like, dude, right behind this door is like these guys who to us might as well have been the Sticks. They might as well have been right. You know, Journey.
Yeah.
You know, and you get in there and these guys are eating chicken, you know, eating chicken bones at the kitchen table and acting like everyday average people. And that is another very intoxicating thing about this style of music. It's so gonzo. It's so, you know, there hasn't been a band that I saw in a small venue that I haven't talked to every, I haven't interacted and had an awesome experience every single time.
Awesome.
So, I don't, oh, so the yeah. rest of, yeah, the rest of my yeah. list is, so all these guys to me are people who changed the game or set forward like a whole new genre. Tim Armstrong from Rancid.
Okay.
Actually Operation Ivy before that, but right. like his specific, like that ska core style.
Ska's coming back, so they say.
It is. The fifth wave or wherever we're at.
Yeah, wherever
wave.
We're at, yeah.
Frank Navetta. Or okay. Steven Egerton, both from Descendants, but Frank being, I think he's just got like more of a raw. So that first record.
I got to see them at Riot Fest a few years ago. Milo Goes to College is still my favorite album by them.
Yeah,
it's just my personal favorite.
Ball, I think it's my favorite. But,
Ball's good too. Yeah.
And who do I? Oh, East Bay Ray from the Dead Kennedys, because he was one of these guys that put effects. So he's got like, you know, phasers and flangers and all kinds of different like choruses that are like subtly put in there, which you didn't usually hear. It's usually just a driving wall of power. And this guy's got these like
surf.
It's like,
he's
well, what's
the
he
surf
doing?
Guy. Yeah, he's the surf.
It's crazy. You can do this punk. And it's still hardcore.
Yeah.
Johnny Ramone.
I'm sorry. Sorry to cut you off, but I did get to see. I saw them this year and I got to see
Dead Kennedys.
East Bay Ray. Yeah. And he was great. I mean, I forgot how old they are. No disrespect.
Yeah, no, right.
He was still tearing it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, right on.
So Johnny Ramone, obviously.
Yeah.
Dee yeah. Boone from Minutemen. So okay. he plays like, it's like a clean channel, like jazz funk, but still a punk band. Really awesome. If you're not familiar with them, I will definitely link you to some of their best.
I know some Minutemen, but okay. not in depth, probably okay. like yourself. But that's what's awesome about punk is you can throw all your little spices right. in there from other genres, sure. and it's going to work.
Billy Zoom from X and John Doe both, okay. because they had this contrasting style where Billy Zoom was also like a sort of a rockabilly player. And then... John Doe was like a straight, like also a rockabilly player, but had more of like a rock edge. So in Congress with each other, it was a really cool sound. And then Steve Albini, obviously,
right.
the best. I mean, this guy created a whole genre, subgenre thing of his own.
He did.
You know, that nobody else is a part of except for him, but he's got like all these bands that play that same kind of that music kind of, that are all
yeah,
his.
And his guitar tone.
I still want to know how he made the guitar strap go straight around his back. I've tried to duplicate. Have you ever seen it?
No.
He wears it like almost a belt, like a seat belt.
Really?
Like in the back seat of a car. It doesn't strap across, you know, crossbody.
Did you ever get to see Big Black back in the day?
No.
Okay.
Never.
Because they were around just for a short amount of time, sure. correct?
Yeah, there was a touch and go anniversary party, which I kicked myself for not going to. Because everybody that was on their label was at that show, and Jeff, the singer of Naked Ray Gun, who was the bass player originally of Big Black. Was played with Big Black. So it was one of those things again where I kicked myself, but at the time I was like, I'm not going to that.
And for those of you who, if you're unaware of who Steve Albini is, the most commercial successful record that he produced was Nirvana's In Utero, mm-hmm. and he was known for. Recording that big sound in a room live, that was his deal. Like, give me the feedback. Just give sure. it to me. He was the perfect, or he is the perfect producer at capturing that element of, I don't know, just the full body guitar sound or the plummeting drums, you know, like he's the man. And
but his own style is super rangy and
yeah.
like it's very
it's
odd.
Like a headache.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you don't. You know, I always tell my headache. Wife, the other day it's we were listening migraine. To the Hold Steady, which is like one of the only contemporary bands I'm really into at this point. Not a punk band, but like definitely punk sensibility. And she's like, oh, I can't stand the singer. And I was like, it'll grow on you. Trust me. Because I was the same way. And then I was like, all right. Yeah. So that's how like Big Black, it's like in the beginning, you're like, this doesn't even sound like it's, is this even right? Like, what is he playing a note or is he just banging? And then you get it, man. It just
yeah.
moves you. So
it does. It does. Yeah.
So that's my list.
Right on. Stratton's going to settle his score about Black Flag since you like the old school
sure.
Black Flag and I like the new school Black Flag. I believe he has something under his sleeve for this, don't you, Stratton?
I just had a Black Flag game.
Oh, okay.
It's just 10 obnoxious questions. You guys might both walk out of the studio after this, but
And if not, we're going to buy you a pair of sweatpants.
Do I get a buzzer?
No, we don't do buzzers. What we do is if you know the answer, well, I'm just going to go back and forth on this one because, we're not going to do this competitively. We're just going to casual competition.
No wrestling.
I know, no wrestling, no intensity.
Right.
So it's a combination of true or false questions. And then at the end, there's 10 questions. At the end, it's just, I got a would you rather question. And then I kind of want to test your DIY limits. So it's just kind of, how DIY are you? So, first question is for Joe.
Okay.
And this one's
personal.
No. Ready? True or false? In 1984, Henry Rollins was irritable for an entire year because of an incident he couldn't get past, in which he was writing a new song and he accidentally rhymed the word dummy with tummy.
False.
That is correct.
All right. Thank you.
I agree with my man here.
Yeah. I was going to say, that generally he was probably irritated, but when you put in that specific thing as the reason for making him irritated. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was irritated all of 1984.
But not necessarily about that.
But he is a poet, so I could see it. It's a good question.
Well, yeah. So, all right. Yeah, ready, Dave?
Yeah.
Which one of the following guys was not a member of Black Flag?
Mm.
Ready?
Mm.
Keith Morris. Stephen Egerton, Chuck Dukowski, and if I pronounce it wrong, forgive me, Bill Stevenson, Dez Kadena, Henry Rollins, or Andre Charles. Yeah, or Andre Charles.
A member, should I even qualify it? Like they were ever on a
if you're struggling.
Have they ever played with the, are you asking?
No,
I'm just
going to
go with Stephen Egerton.
I'll reread it.
That's my answer, my final answer either way.
So the answer has, there's like no debate that this person was not in Black Flag. So it's Andre Charles.
Oh, okay.
So you're incorrect.
When was Stephen Egerton in Black Flag?
I don't know. I Wikipedia'd it. So it could be wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, if he sat in, hey, listen, I got it wrong, whatever.
Just so you guys know, Andre Charles is RuPaul.
Oh,
see.
Shout out to RuPaul. He probably
Shout
like
out
punk.
To RuPaul.
He probably like punk or something in the '80s. I don't know.
Okay. The four bars of ready, Joe?
Yeah.
The four bars of Black Flag, the symbol, represent which of the following? The four band members as rectangles, the four pillars of anarchy, waving black flag, or a quadruple patty cheeseburger that was burned on a grill and the buns fell off. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna have to go with the waving black flag.
That is correct.
Thank you.
See what I mean, Dave?
Yeah.
He's got it.
Ready, Dave?
Yeah.
True or false? Black Flag was a band from 1976 to 1986, but took 6-month break in 1982 because drummer Roberto Robo Valverde was distraught and couldn't play. When asked why, he said, and I quote, dude, E.T. really messed me up.
I'm going to say that's true.
Yeah. And it's got to be true.
That's incorrect.
Oh. But hey, here's a quick tidbit. The 19
AT trivia?
No. The 1982 Black Flag demos is by far, in my opinion, the best lineup and the best shit ever by Black Flag. They had Dez, they had Robo, they had Chuck on bass, Greg Ginn and Henry. It's just the shit with the two guitars. Everybody check out those demos. 1982 Black Flag demos.
All right, ready, Joe?
Yeah, I'm ready.
We're almost halfway through.
Okay.
So this one, I mean, you already said it. So who's the famous designer of the Black Flag flyers, the promotional flyers that they do?
Raymond Pettibon.
That is correct.
I started to feel like a setup.
It was a setup, right?
3-0.
I know. Yeah, he told me. It's a conspiracy.
Home field advantage.
Home field at the green door. I've lost before, though.
The RuPaul thing. Well, nobody knows RuPaul's real name, so that's not fair.
Well, we do now.
Yeah. Okay.
Music
I already
discovery.
Forgot it.
Let's see here. Okay, you'll get this one, Dave.
Come on, Dave.
Before Henry Rollins joined the band, what day job did he have? You get to choose from three. Ready?
He worked at Haagen-Dazs.
Yeah.
Was it the birthday clown at an old folks' home? Was it a roller skate girl at a drive-in Arby's or an ice cream scooper at Haagen-Dazs?
You know, I realize you did write out these funny answers, so I should just... I will, that was my bad. I jumped the gun. I'm going to go with the Haagen-Dazs.
That's all right. I appreciate you trying to stop me. All right, so that's correct. So the score is 3-1. Ready, Joe?
I'm ready.
Which of the following were names Black Flag almost chose when deciding on a band name? Ready? Was it Umbros and the Extra Small Soccer Shorts? Was it The Devil's Hiccup? Was it Burp Singing? Was it Headbutts Over BJs? Was it Starberry Rainbow Explosion? Was it Expired Shadow? Was it Manly Kick Punch Dance? Was it Adult Size Car Seats? Or Angry, what is it? Oh, or was the band possible name Angry at Our Mommies?
What was number two again? The second one you read?
Devil's Hiccup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was that, wasn't it?
No, that was a trick question. None of those dumb names.
Like, man, they definitely. Whoever won that debate.
Devil's Hiccup, man. That's my next band name. I like that.
No, you didn't like adult-sized car seats?
This is my chance to catch up. or lose by one. Is it the last question?
All right. We'll just go back and forth. So this will be faster, and it's not. It's. I'm just going to say the name, and then tell me if it's one of their album names. Ready?
Okay.
Dave, Damaged.
Yes.
Joe, Brass Bowels.
No.
Dave, My War.
Yes.
This is too easy. Joe, Family Man.
Yeah. Yes.
This is too easy. Ready? Dave, Sneezy.
No.
Okay, that's correct. Slip It In, Dave. I mean, Joe.
Yes. And I have.
Cut that part. Nobody needs to know. All right, Dave, Tender Brick.
No.
Joe, Loose Nut.
Yes. My favorite, maybe, kind of, sort of.
Dave, In My Head.
Yes.
Joe, Wet Bottle Rocket.
No, but God, that would be great if it was.
And Dave, Arthritis.
No.
And that was exactly a tie, so that's garbage. It's still 3-1. The last two, so we'll just erase it. Good job, guys. Thank you for participating.
Thank you.
It's like a kid's t-ball game.
Yeah.
I'm not keeping score. Listen, he's totally more punk than me. I get it. You don't want me to feel bad about him. I told you I'm old.
Here's my would you I'm rather. Old. And this is for this is for 3 points. It's 3-1.
Oh. Well, who Ready? Judges? You judge?
I judge.
And you're thrown up there.
Ready? So it's a would you rather question. Who would you rather fight? A fist fight. A 5-minute fist fight.
With who?
Would you rather fight Henry Rollins at the age of 57 or Justin Timberlake at the age of 37?
Oh, give me Timberlake.
He practices jiu-jitsu.
We give a shit.
That is the wrong answer.
Oh, man.
For you. Dave, what's your answer?
Rollins.
That is correct.
All in.
Okay, it's 4 for Dave.
this game is rigged. This rigged. Shit is rigged.
Yeah, we try to be cool with our guests. I don't want you leaving with...
I mean, think about it. If you beat up Justin Timberlake, you beat up Justin Timberlake.
Yeah.
You know?
No one would care.
Yeah, like, right. Yeah.
But they if you beat bad. Up Rollins at 57, right. Like, more street cred, I
sure.
get it.
Yeah, but he's 57.
Yeah,
he actually still is occasionally scary.
There's a lot of 57-year-olds I don't want to mess with.
True.
I don't think he's 57, but Mike Tyson's an old man who still wouldn't want to fight him. Although he's not Mike Tyson, but
no, I do not want
to. I do not want to get punched by Mike Tyson, even if he was lucky enough to get to the age of 70.
Yep.
Now we're gonna test your DIY limits. Either one of you guys, could you draw a stick figure?
Can you draw a stick figure?
Are you able to draw a stick figure?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Can you? Oh, this is dumb. Can you build a birdhouse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of you guys?
Out of wood?
Yes, out of wood.
Yes.
I hope so. I might struggle. I'm not a woodworker.
Oh.
Could
you weld a birdhouse?
No. Fuck.
All right, man. Could you change a car battery? Either one of you guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, congratulations. Could you sand, build, cut, and stain a new kitchen table? Either one of you guys.
Yeah. But I don't know how great it's going to be. I don't know if my wife would want to eat at it, but
I'll try. I could do it. Yeah.
Last two. Let's see how DIY you guys are. Could you stitch a wound?
Yes. I sew like the Dickens.
No. I don't like needles. I don't like injuries.
And I did cut out my own ingrown toenail with an X-Acto knife. So.
Damn, Dave.
Yeah. I told you. It's hardcore.
He is hardcore.
Ingrown toenails are known for being super punk.
Yeah, they are punk.
I wore too much boots too often.
Yeah, too many Doc Martens or Chucks, right. You know, one or the other.
Last question. And again, thank you for playing. I'm sweating.
Shredding, sweating.
Could you fly a small airplane? How DIY are you?
No, I don't like flying.
Do I have to get it off the ground, or do I just need to fly it while it's already in the air?
Look at him.
Great question. Jesus. I think a lot of people get it off the ground. I think landing is the hardest part. So, yeah, you got to get it off the ground.
Do I have to land?
No, you don't have to land.
Oh, then, yeah, I can fly an airplane.
Yeah, Joe?
Sure.
It's very cocky. Very cocky, guys.
Yeah, I would have won there.
If you can fly a plane, I can fly a plane.
Yeah. I don't know about cutting out an ingrown toenail, though.
Yeah.
Thank you for playing. We'll end in a tie. I apologize if anybody's offended by the final result, which is a tie.
Well,
next time you come, Dave, I will have a better game.
All right. No, it was good. It was good. But, Dave, let's go back into that Chicago scene. Naked Reagan, did you see them live back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, not back in their day, but like since their resurgence. So I had, like I said, I had connected with Eric Spicer on MySpace, as did a lot of other people. And so they came back and they played a secret show. This is prior to the first Riot Fest. So that was starting, it was gearing up to happen. That was in the works.
Okay.
So Eric sort of reached out to a bunch of people that were like, you know, Naked Ray Gun fans, and were like, hey, and I guarantee this to everybody that he talked to, don't tell anybody, I'm telling you, but there's going to be a private show. We're playing under, it was a Ukrainian name that they called the band, and we're going to be playing, it's Naked Ray Gun, but it's going to be called this, so like, go, and it's going to be Naked Ray Gun. So like a select group of people went, saw that show, and then Riot Fest had the first Riot Fest, second Riot Fest, third, I don't know if they, I don't think they play it anymore.
Okay.
But yeah, so absolutely, in, not in their necessarily their heyday, but in my, when I was still young enough.
Any other Chicago, any other Chicago punk bands you'd like to shout out? Like,
while I was,
that you saw live
in a band, you know, we were constantly, like I said, at Off the Alley. We were up at
Fireside.
At Fireside. So one of the best performing local bands at the time was a band called Slapstick, and Matt Skiba was in Slapstick. He's basically,
remember that name,
dude. They were like ska core. Yeah.
Okay.
But just an amazing performance. And that place is a venue that if you didn't get to go to it, like, I hate to do the, like, hey, I was there and you weren't. But it was one of those opportunities, just like Off the Alley, which was a juice bar. You couldn't get alcohol. But it was a place to be seen. And if you could venture out a little bit farther, all the way up to, I think it was on Fullerton, downtown where the Fireside Bowl was at. Like I said, I saw the Vandals there. I saw Agent Orange there. Everybody that came through town that was a bigger name that wasn't big enough to play the Metro, or maybe was on the downside of their career, was, you know, like Agent Orange had, you know, they were a little bit older. They were playing there, and like I said, you could, they were as close as I am to you right now. In fact, Mike Palm blew a fireball out of his mouth, and it singed my hair. How close I was.
Nice. Yeah, man, the old Chicago scene. I we've had other guests, but that Fireside Bowl always comes up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so cool because, I mean, I...
Dirtiest bathroom I've ever been in my life.
Well, go across the street here to Main Street in Hobart, Indiana. That's a pretty dirty bathroom. Yeah. But, yeah, that was a nasty bathroom. Mm. And I always remember the drop ceiling there. Yeah. Remember?
Yeah.
Like, people, I've talked about it before, but just punching holes in it, and it's just nasty.
Well, if you go back, like, on YouTube, I think AFI, there's, like, a bunch of shows that you can go back and see where we were recorded there. And man, it brings you back, because the place smelled like stale cigarettes and just that, like, that was one of my first forays into going to a place that served alcohol before I was old enough to go, because their bar was separate. So you would go see all ages shows, and it was small. So like, people would be coming in and out with drinks right in front of, not like anybody cared anyway, but, so it was like being in a bar, and it's the first time you smell that smell of, like, a, you know, this beer and cigarettes have been sitting there all night and spill all
piss
the carpet
on the ground. Oh yeah.
So, and it was in a terrible neighborhood. You didn't know if you're going to come out and your car was still going to be there, or if anything was in your car, it wasn't going to be there.
That's when you know it's a good show.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the hood, basically, you know. It's
what I say about Chinese restaurants. If you go in and they only have like 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and it doesn't really explain what it is, that's the best Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, it is. Go to. It's very true. Very true. And now, how about worst punk rock shows you've ever been to?
Well, I hate to say this, because I like both of these bands.
Keep it real.
The worst show I ever saw, unmatched, was from Outcome the Wolves. It was a Rancid show. I took some younger guys there, because I was a little bit older at the time, that their parents weren't going to take them. So I was like, I'll take them.
And sounds creepy, but that's cool.
I fell asleep. I was sitting down. I fell asleep. To this day, that to me is one of the most solid records. And you know, that's one of those bands where people go, well, if you, Green Day is not punk, how is Rancid punk? We're talking a bit different animal. Rancid is 100% a punk band.
Agreed.
Legit. Matt Freeman, one of the best bass players. I mean, just gets intricate for a punk band. Like, he does some crazy stuff. But anyway, Rancid, I fell asleep at. And I saw Social Distortion one time, where I'd seen him about 6 months prior to that. And Mike Ness literally came out and did a scripted, if you hear their live record, he did the same crowd interaction 6 months after I just saw it. I was like, you know, he told the same stories with the same gusto. And I was like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, that's.
But I did.
Punk rock.
To go back, I did see a Descendants show in Elgin in the early, probably like 96. And it was like probably their first resurgence. And they came out literally, hey, we're the Descendants. And they played every single song they had in their repertoire in, I don't know, like an hour and 5 minutes or less. Zero talking, zero crowd communication. Nothing. And it was balls to the walls, the most fun, awesome performance I've ever seen. It was crazy. It was just an all around great time. Like, you, every song I love. There's not a Descendants song that I don't love. Right on. So to me, that's one of those bands that, like, I didn't even know what they looked like, because another thing to go back, I hate to digress, but in those days when you were listening to these bands that weren't on TV, and it's like, okay, we're talking about, I meant to stop you before, but the iconography, okay, of Black Flag with the Pettibone stuff, that to me, that's where Black Flag really is strong, where they go, we're not only like a kick-ass hardcore band, but like nobody does what we do. They're flyers and art. Yeah. And it was an all-inclusive thing. Absolutely.
And they were a threat.
Yeah, for
they
sure.
They scared the LAPD.
Sure.
The LAPD closed down some shows. Like, they were, sure, they were a threat. They
so a threat. that part of the punk movement, the art, the flyers, the album covers. One thing a lot of them didn't do was have pictures of the bands in them, because I think a lot of times they thought, like, well, that's like what Journey does, or, you know, these promo pictures. So you didn't even know what the bands looked like. I didn't know what Descendants looked like till like probably that day. I was like, oh, that's Milo. That's what he looks like. Man, these guys are ugly. They are nerds.
Right.
So Naked Ray Gun always had, like, they had pictures of them in there. So I knew what those guys looked like. But and they look like Chicago, like, you know, pipe fitters and plumbers, which is what these dudes are. They're blue collar, whatever.
Blue collar working class, man.
But the majority of these bands that were on the West Coast and that were around at that time, they had this, like, crazy cool art and you know, flyers and this, that. But you really didn't know what the band looked like. So, you know, that was always interesting to see these guys. Like, I remember seeing Dick Human from the Subhumans. And I was like, oh, it was Citizen Fish at the time. And I'm like, man, he's an odd-looking person.
That's probably why they didn't put him in the album cover.
It's true.
They weren't the most handsome of
It's true.
Fellas.
Well, they put the Ramones and Kiss both. Remember Kiss took their makeup off one time.
Yeah.
They put it right back.
The Ramones were by far the ugliest band of all time.
Kiss is pretty bad.
Kiss is ugly, but Gene Simmons has slept with more women than anyone.
Yeah, that's true.
So he says. Let's move on to a little segment called I Like, Don't Like What You Like.
Okay.
I mentioned it to you through message, so you could start off. Is there something that everybody likes that you don't like right now?
That everyone likes right now, or something I've never liked that everybody likes?
There you go. We'll do that.
I mean, where do I start? I don't like a lot of stuff.
Right.
I mean, this list could go. Ben's probably sitting there right now listening to the guy I podcast with, like, here we go.
Here we go.
But I'm gonna say, like, I hate Temple of the Dog. It's the worst.
Oh, wow.
And when people go, like,
I like Temple of the Dog.
I was just at a show. Ben's band was actually playing. He's in a band called One Timer. And somebody was at the show, and they're like, hey, play I'm Going going Hungry or whatever. And I was like, the worst song I've ever heard. It's terrible. Please don't play it. It's a load of crap. It sucks. It's self-aggrandizing. It's a bunch of dudes who sing extremely well, who should have done something different than been in rock bands. I don't know.
Well, I mean, what else could Chris Cornell or what else could he do?
I don't know. But it came across at some point in time into my sphere, and I was like, nah, I'm not having this.
Not having
this. Nope.
What about now? Is there anything, like, right now that everybody likes that you just don't like?
Yeah, again, outside of vaping.
I don't think anybody likes douche flutes.
No, yeah. I mean, again, I'm trying. It doesn't take me long. People that drive around with dogs on their lap. Are we talking about music?
Yeah, I mean, okay. You could do. Yeah, let's kind of keep it music. Like, okay. We could go out.
He just cracked
hours.
His knuckles and
yeah,
got comfortable.
Yeah, I was like, where are we going from here? Yeah. So the whatever the country rap.
Ooh.
I don't know what there's a name for it, but these guys that do, they have, like, country music beats going, like, they merged. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's
called something specific, but it's terrible. And there's a lot of it. And I know there's a
this is your time to be on your soapbox.
Yeah, there's a guy named Adam Calhoun, a guy named Hozier.
How do you know these names, Dave?
Just because people send this stuff to me to annoy me and irritate me.
they
love to see me go, because I'm like, and then you look at the downloads these people get on Spotify or whatever.
I like Hozier.
I mean, this is insane. Do you?
Look, of course
you?
He does.
So you know what I'm talking about.
He's got a pretty good Tiny Desk set.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah. I mean,
what
you don't like
mean?
Him, but yeah. You know, the show. There's a thing on YouTube called Tiny Desk
that NPR does.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like
it
a three or four song acoustic set, and it's a bunch of different people. So, yeah, he's
check
got a good
out.
One.
Check it out.
So, what is that called? That rap country? Is there
Hozier?
Like a certain name for
Hozier,
that?
No. I was going to say, I wish you guys would stop looking at me. Oh.
he's getting nervous.
Like I know the name of this terrible genre.
Don't ask me too many questions.
No. Hosier, as far as I know.
Well, you know who Hosier is.
I might be confusing him. I thought he was just some British dude that like sings love songs.
No, we're talking about two different people.
Yeah, see,
we're talking about two different people.
Right on.
But I'm still going to say you like him.
Yeah. We'll just go.
I'm on the record having said it, we'll so I can't take it back.
Yeah, I'm going to edit it out and use it on my podcast. Right.
So here's my thing. I like don't like what you like. Basically, any band that performs at Wrigley Field, and I think it's because I hate the Cubs and I hate Wrigley Field, and I just hate that. So I'll just leave it.
Joe hates AC/DC.
Yeah, but I mean, I love the Foo Fighters they just played, but there's something bro-ish about Wrigley Field that I've just never been able to tap into. And so like when there's a band that plays there, I just kind of lose just a touch of respect.
I mean, Billy Joel played there though.
But Billy Joel sucks.
Well, here's the thing.
This is
an argument I have with people all the time. Like I will tell you, the Grateful Dead sucks. They suck.
I don't like them either.
They're amazing musicians. I cannot take that away from them. Fish, Dave Matthews Band, some of the best players there are.
I agree.
The band sucks. I don't like their music, and
but they're great musicians.
But yeah, so I won't take that. But you have to be joking if you say that Billy Joel sucks.
I just don't enjoy them.
Okay.
I mean, there's
like
a
now
few songs.
Or then or just ever
like ever.
His entire body of work.
Yeah, I'm not celebrating it.
All right. Well, see, you definitely like something or hate something I like.
Right. I mean, but there's something there like we were talking like. I like don't like what you like anything at Wrigley pretty much, and then bro-ish podcasts like when people bro out. I don't like that shit.
Like when they laugh at each other, like Jimmy Fallon when they laugh too much at each other's jokes, or
Ben
calls it watching your shot. Like you hit a home run and you stand there and you just put your hands on your hips.
Sutton and I are guilty of that, you know. But it's like when you have too many inside jokes and. You know, that shit, like, just bro out, like, too many dudes in one room bro out. So I'll just leave it at that. Sretton, anything? Are you going to keep it all positive?
Yeah, I'm just going to keep it positive. You guys are doing a great job. Well, I love Dave Matthews, man.
I love Dave. All right, well, we'll just go into the hate mail then, since you're being so positive over there. What kind of hate mail did we get this week?
I just have one, so okay. I'll fly through it.
Is it for my wife?
Well, we know you're going to say
yeah, how'd you know? It says, Dear Dave... What's this stuff against you being against Dave Matthews Band?
Don't wrestle Joe, arm wrestle Joe, because if he beats you, we're getting a divorce. You know that this is an ongoing joke. If my wife ever sees me defeated in any way, she's leaving me.
Is she?
Oh, yeah.
Damn, that's pretty.
Yeah, no, she keeps. Yeah,
she just
things
keeps
are
reminding
pretty tense.
You.
Exactly.
Times are tough.
So we tied on that black flag thing, though, right?
Yeah,
just
yeah,
for the record.
You're good, you're
right.
Good. You're
all
good. Right. Marriage is intact. Dear Joe, love the show. Really.
Thank you.
Love the hate mail segment. With the compliment out of the way, I have a bone to pick and a few to break.
Ooh.
What
we got?
I've been patient enough, and I'll wait. I was going to preface this with, I had no idea. Like, this is fantastic timing for an email. I've been patient enough, and I'll wait longer because the content is great. But when in the hell are you guys going to do a show about Henry Rollins? At the age of 57, that man is still doing things his way. He travels, gives talks, plays music. He does everything on his terms, and he's still a badass. He gives people shit that deserve shit, and he is respectful and cool to those who deserve it. Morrissey is a turd. Glenn Danzig is a turd. Most of the NWA are turds.
Oh.
Chino from Deftones is a turd 75% of the time. Maybe the podcast should get renamed Turd Talk with Joe I Like Talking About Turds Riley.
Good.
I'm ready for some Rollins talk. He's awesome and a great example of life lived on somebody's own terms with respect given to others. I'm also ready for that in-depth multi-part Wu-Tang episode too. Love Wu-Tang. Good luck with Turd Talk, Joe. I think it's awesome. Marcus from Indianapolis.
Marcus from Indianapolis. Naptown? They're coming at us from Naptown?
Have you ever heard of Wugazi?
Yeah.
You've heard that before?
Yeah.
It's like, kind of an interesting. They mix Fugazi
and Wu-Tang together.
Yeah,
that
kind
was
of
great.
Actually pretty interesting.
That was great. Well, to this individual from Indianapolis.
He left his first name.
What's that?
He left
what
first
is it,
name?
Eugene?
Yes. Marcus.
Marcus. You know, Mark.
You still won't call him his name.
No. I'm not going to recognize.
It's a power move, right? I do that all the time.
You know, Morrissey, I love him. A lot of people hate him, whatever. But he'll listen to this episode, and he got a little Rollins.
How could anybody hate Morrissey? He's asexual. I mean, he claims. Yeah, well,
so
either way, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I think it's funny, man. I know a lot of people who go hard at Morrissey one way or the other. It's for some reason very
love hate.
Yeah, love hate.
Right.
And I actually fall in the middle of that. So.
Right. So if you had to say though, are you steering more towards the love or the hate for Morrissey? That's the final question.
if I had to choose, and this being a punk rock episode, I hate him.
But the Smiths are punk in their own weird
way.
Yeah,
not punk enough for
okay.
me.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough, Dave. Fair enough. Threaten, throw him out, would you? Throw him out. We're going to give him this Morrissey LP.
He knows where the door is.
Right? We're going to give him this Morrissey LP to take on his way. But yeah. Dave, thanks for coming, man. We really appreciate
it. Awesome time. Yeah, awesome.
We really appreciate it. So everybody, please check out his podcast, Hey My Man. It's on all listening platforms, correct?
Yes.
And
yes,
social media. Mm-hmm. He's doing a lot of the sticker love, putting his stuff over there.
For sure.
On everything. We might have to put some musically meditated stickers over his stickers. You know?
Do it.
A little friendly rivalry. But thanks for coming out, man.
I will. I would love to say that I'm going to reciprocate, but I don't know that I am, only because I don't know what to talk to you about. Like, if you want to complain, if you want a platform to complain,
oh, just give it
and
just
be,
give me time.
Yeah, if you want to jump on the bandwagon and also air some grievances, you come on over and we'll get that done, or we'll come here and we'll get it done. That way you don't have to come, because you know I don't get to have a studio. I sit in my basement.
Just check Sretton's messages on his phone for me. All my text messages. I have a lot of grievances.
Well, I can allow you a plat. We'll call you something else. You could pick your name and then you could just come on there and air your grievances.
Yeah, I'm down. I got a lot of shit.
You can complain about my wife if it makes you feel better. That way you don't right. have to. It doesn't affect anybody in your personal sphere.
Well, just, yeah, I don't have any wives to complain about anymore, but yeah, maybe in the future.
I like being positive.
Me too. Thanks for coming out, Dave.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
All right, man.
Later.
Adios. I'm musically meditated.
That's right.
I'm musically meditated.
That's right.
I'm musically meditated.
Or my ass over there.